Hello everyone, and welcome to JTalk Extra Time, all of the latest news from J2 and J3 coming your way shortly as usual. I'm John Steele, hosting this week, and with me to run through some, another busy weekend of J2 action really is James Taylor. James, how are we today?
Pretty good, thanks John. Getting busy now, it's 1st of April, so new academic year and stuff like that, but yeah, I'm all right. How are you?
Yes, very good, thanks. I remembered my sun cream at the Yokohama FC game on Saturday, so I'm not as red as I have been in the past when I haven't brought the right protection. So yeah, all good here, thanks James. Yeah, and April the 1st, unbelievable. No April Fools here, or not till we get to talking about the bottom of the table anyway, I suspect. So yeah, let's get into it. James, if that's all right, J2 round 7 took place on Saturday last week. So I'll run through all the games quickly, and we'll stop on the way for some of the bigger talking points. Fagiano Okayama are 2 points clear at the top of the table. They drew 0-0 at Oita. Good result for Okayama, really, because they played the last 40 minutes with 10 men after a red card for Takahiro Yanagi. I suppose that means the other Yanagi will be in for the next round if Takahiro is suspended. There was a big shock for second place Shimizu. They were well beaten at Yamagata. This game finished 2-0. Lovely strike from Ryo Makita for the opener. And then Junya Takahashi headed in late on after a pretty poor defensive mix-up to seal a first win in 5 games for Yamagata. And then the first of our kind of feature games in this pod, James, is Vegalta Sendai. They're up to third in the table after coming from behind to win 2-1 at Mitsuzawa against Yokohama FC on Saturday. Really impressive performances from Sendai, especially in the second half when they scored twice in just 5 minutes to turn this game around. For me, it just felt like Sendai had a bit too much quality, especially in that second half. That'll be a big worry for Yokohama FC boss Shuhei Yomoda. In the first half, Sendai hit the crossbar with a strike from Aoi Kudo, and they had an effort from Masato Nakayama cleared off the line by Akito Fukumori. A lovely effort from the edge of the box from Yoshihiro Nakano gave Yokohama FC the lead at half-time. But in the second half, Ryosuke Sagara pretty much dismantled the Yokohama FC's defence. He crossed for Nakayama to head in an equaliser, and then just a few minutes later, he beautifully, sumptuously curled the ball into the bottom corner for the winner. So it was Yokohama FC 1, Sendai 2 at full time. So yeah, that leaves Sendai leapfrogging Yokohama FC into third, and Yokohama FC are in fifth. James, I was at the stadium watching this game, but how did it look to you on the television?
Yeah, I only saw the highlights of this, and I read your write-up on Discord as well. But my first reaction was, well, finally someone broke through Sendai's defence. Mm. Because they what was it, 3 consecutive nil-nils? Mm. They've only conceded 3 goals from their 7 games. And it took a really good strike to finally, reach the back of their net. The one thing I would say, though, was that I think perhaps there was a defender who should have got closer to Nakano. It was a bit flat-footed, and his teammates let him know about that as soon as the ball went in. But it was such a good strike. Even the goalie didn't even move. Couldn't do anything about it. It was a really good hit. And my second reaction to this game was, finally, Sendai broke through someone else's defence because they hadn't scored for a few weeks. And it was, yeah, you mentioned it. It was Ryunosuke Sagara. He was probably the difference, really, wasn't he?
I think that's right.
To cross for the first goal, and then there was good work from, was it Yuta Goke, who won the ball in midfield and then set up Sagara for a really good second goal. And yeah, it looked like a good game. I said I only saw the highlights, but a good game between two good teams. I'm still worried about Yokohama's attack, because from the highlights, it looked like most of the shots were from outside the area.
Mm.
And once they got into the area and tried to take shots, everything was just getting blocked. And they didn't really seem to have an answer to that. But I think it was Takahashi came on as a sub, didn't he? Quite late.
That's right.
On.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, he probably will start to feature more. From the next game on Wednesday, I suppose. So that's good. And yeah, it's Sendai are looking really good, aren't they? They're defending really well, and probably could have scored more than two here, to be honest. I mean, yeah, you said Kudo hit the bar. Nakayama had a shot cleared off the line. I think Onaiwu had a good chance that he messed up, basically. Mm. But yeah, Sendai looking good. Yokohama FC not looking bad, but yeah, still work to be done. But what was it like? What was the whole game like?
Yeah, I think I agree strongly with the comments that you made there. I think on Sendai they were so kind of rugged and solid defensively. That you mentioned Yokohama FC having shots, but they were getting blocked. And yeah, Sendai, just that back four was really, really well organised. And something that they did, which impressed me, or rather didn't do, is they just didn't mess around. Like, there were so many clearances from that back four, whereas, I mean, the previous home game for Yokohama was against Gunma, who tried to play out from the back whenever possible, with varying degrees of success. Sendai didn't really play out from the back at all. They were just basically hoofing the ball clear, keeping possession if they could, but mainly making sure, you know, safety first. Mm. There wasn't any of that you sometimes get where, you know, defenders will leave the ball for each other or leave the ball for the goalkeeper. Mm. If there was any hint that a bouncing ball in Sendai's half might be dangerous, it was hoofed. It was returned with interest to the Yokohama FC half very quickly. I thought that was quite refreshing because most teams, even in J2, you know, the Japanese way is to just keep possession as much as possible and try and build up, you know, along the deck. So it was good to see that. I think what made a slight difference in the second half was that Renji Matsui came on for the second half, and he became a bit of a link between that back four and the attackers, you know, the midfield and the forwards, because it did feel that the first half was a bit like Sendai were like in two units, like a strong back line and then the rest of the team trying to get things going in an attacking sense. But he kind of was able to link the two together pretty well. He was coming very short to the back four to receive the ball and build attacks. But yeah, they just have an embarrassment of riches in those attacking positions. I mean, to be able to bring on George Onaiwu, who has a lot of pace, was a problem in the closing stages. Elon, the Brazilian forward, also came on, and whilst perhaps carrying a little bit of timber, speaking as someone who knows what that looks like when I look in the mirror, I can see it. But he was also very quick and very direct and caused some trouble. So, that, you know, they have good options off the bench. Mateus Moraes, ex-Yokohama FC defender, came on in the second half as well. I'm not surprised that he's not getting a regular starting place, because I think the centre-backs that they have already look better than him, to be honest. So, yeah, it was a really, really confident performance. Lovely goal by Sagara. Lovely finish for the winner, because he didn't really have much of a lane to kind of bend that ball into. You know, quite a few players would have ended up just hitting the defender, I think, at that point. So really, really good goal in it. Yeah, no real negatives. Fantastic away support as well in the stadium, has to be said. I'm sure there was at least 1,200 Sendai fans. I walked back to Yokohama station after the game and I didn't see any Yokohama City supporters, really. Perhaps a couple, but it's mainly kind of yellow shirts. Very, very happy yellow shirts on the way back to the stadium. For Yokohama FC, the stands were a bit sparsely populated, and I think as I've been kind of was talking about on Discord, the prices were raised for this game. Yokohama FC have three different price categories for their tickets, and Sendai, because it's known that they'll bring a lot of away supporters, the price is jacked up to squeeze as much money out of them as possible. I really hate that system, to be honest. Yeah. And Yokohama FC fans, I think, voted a little bit with their feet and stayed away. So yeah, they even, you know, behind the goal was a little bit empty. So because it was 1,000 yen more than a normal game. So I think I really hope that's something that the club can look at. Obviously, the ticket prices and performances on the pitch are not the same thing, but I don't think it's right that you're asking people to pay 1,000 yen more to watch a game against Sendai, a good team as they are. It seems a bit extreme, but yeah, disappointing for Yokohama FC and a bit of a come down after, you know, back-to-back wins. But Sendai looked very good, and they were more confident than I thought they would be after three 0-0 draws in a row. So yeah, definitely a team to watch. All right, James, on that note, shall we... I forgot I was hosting there. We'll leave that in. moving things on then. Nagasaki are fourth. This is despite only drawing away at Tochigi. This game finished 1-1. Lovely header from Matthias Jesus gave Nagasaki the lead. He was impressive again. Early on in the second half, Tochigi had a penalty saved by Nagasaki's keeper Gaku Harada. Harada brought down Harumi Minamino and then saved Minamino's penalty. And then Nagasaki tried to close out the game. They hit the woodwork twice late on, but Minamino struck with a left foot rocket from just inside the box to earn Tochigi a draw. And another kind of a featured game for us coming up now, James. Kofu are sixth. They're level on points with Yokohama FC and Renofa Yamaguchi. This is after Yamaguchi won 2-0 at Kofu at the weekend. A brilliant chipped effort from Dai Hirase for the Yamaguchi opener right at the start of the second half. And then Shunsuke Yamamoto sealed the win with a tap-in with about 12 minutes left after a shot from Kota Kawano had been parried. I thought there were some really good saves from Kenta Oseki in the Yamaguchi goal, especially good in terms of bravery, you know, diving at the feet of forwards where he knew he was probably going to get clattered. So a fantastic win for Yamaguchi, James. I didn't really see that coming, but what did you think?
Yeah, I didn't expect this, but it was quite an even game. And Yamaguchi played well enough to earn the 3 points. It wasn't like a smash and grab kind of thing. They were quite I always say they're quite aggressive in the way they play, but they just let Kofu pass it around the back, and as soon as Kofu crossed halfway, the Yamaguchi players were kind of onto them and pressured them, and Kofu, they struggled for the first part of the match. It took them a while to create any meaningful chances. Yamaguchi kind of stifled them quite well. And also, I think what helped Yamaguchi a bit here was that they were not doing short goal kicks and playing it out from the back quite so much, because that has been their downfall in recent seasons very often. Whereas here they were just hitting it a bit longer, and not just goal kicks, but several good opportunities or good attacks started because the centre backs played a long ball up to the forwards, and they were a very impressive team again here, and they're seventh. They're unbeaten in three, whereas Kofu are winless in three. It's interesting. It was interesting to see these two sides come up against each other and see how well Yamaguchi dealt with Kofu's attack, because Kofu do have a very good attack, a lot of experienced and talented and effective attackers. There were a couple of funny moments in this one involving strikers and goalkeepers. There was one where Kofu tried to play a ball over the top and it went to no one, so Henan kind of headed it back to Seki to the side of the goal. And Seki had to run and slide to keep it in play. But his body was behind the byline. And Kazushi Mitsuhira followed in. And then as Seki was like keeping the ball, he had two hands on it, keeping it in play. Mitsuhira was trying to knee it behind the line and claim a corner, which he did not get. And then up the other end, I think it was Henan played a long ball over the top and it bounced past the Kofu defender, and Tsubasa Umeki, the Yamaguchi striker, got in between the defender and the Kofu goalie and managed to head it past the goalie. But because he had to run around the goalie, the defender was able to recover, and then the bounce of the ball, or it spun or something, and Umeki couldn't get it. The goalie smothered it. And as the goalie was rolling, he managed to very gently, I think, kick Umeki in the leg, and Umeki went down quite dramatically and did not get the penalty that he was hoping for. But I thought those were a couple of entertaining moments in what was a very interesting game. What did you think of this one?
Well, I think I just watched the highlights, so about your superior knowledge, but I think the point that you made about this not being a smash and grab rings true. I know it was very windy up at JIT Recycling Stadium for this one. I think the wind was with Yamaguchi in the first half, from what I could see, and I think that helped them a little bit. But yeah, this wasn't a case of them turning up and kind of snatching 3 points. I thought they earned it, and they matched Kofu pretty much man for man for most of the game. I thought the goal from Dai Hirase was interesting, because when he's a defender, I think he scored in the previous round. With a header, which is kind of what you expect from like a burly centre back. This was like a kind of delicate you know, sort of curling thing that just like hit the underside of the bar on its way in. And I, at first blush, I thought he was just trying to cross it into the danger zone and had got it wrong slash right, you know, in that it had ended up going straight. Yeah. But I think watching it again, I think he meant it. That was a really interesting finish. And yeah, I think they earned the 3 points. Kofu were a bit flat and they had a lot of shots from outside the box, but not too much inside. And there were some quite loud boos at full time. So I think you mentioned Kofu not 1 in 3. Obviously, locals not overly happy with how things are going just at the moment. But for Yamaguchi, I wonder if we might be on the verge of having to sort of reassess them, because they've got 11 points already from 7 rounds. I mean, it's very early days. You can't really call them safe from relegation yet. you know, but on the basis of what I've seen, I can't imagine them. This is going to haunt me, I suppose, but I can't imagine them being in any relegation trouble based on the first sort of, you know, seven games that I've seen. And Kofu, I mean, they're in. That's the funny thing about Kofu. You see, they're not doing very well right now, but they're still sixth. They are just always around fifth. I know they had that bad season, the Emperor's Cup winning season, where they finished like, was it 18th or 19th? But yeah, they just don't seem to, like, I feel like they could win the next game and then they'll be fifth, and then they'll lose and then they'll be sixth. But they just, you can't really, you mentioned how many good players they've got, you just can't really write them off at this early stage. So I think they'll be disappointing. I think with the best win in the world, every team thinks they're going to get 3 points at home to Yamaguchi. But you know, Yokohama FC didn't. So that was the first round. I remember being very impressed with Yamaguchi back on the opening day, and it's another impressive performance for them and a deserved win, I think. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see how far they can go. You know, up in seventh at the moment is pretty impressive. So okay, James, we've talked about teams scaling the height, so we better switch gears. We're going to go to the big battle at the bottom, where Gunma won 1-0. At Tokushima. This leaves Tokushima bottom of the table in 20th. Tokushima had so many chances in this game, and there were some big saves from Gunma's keeper Ryo Ishii, especially in the first half. Thiago Alves made a big impact in the second half, coming on for his Tokushima debut. He had 4 shots in his 31 minutes on the pitch. He actually scored as well, but the goal was disallowed, I think, quite harshly for an offside against Noah Kenshin Brown. So Tokushima absolutely throwing the kitchen sink at Gunma in this match. This was the battle between the bottom two in the table. So that meant the stage was set for a sucker punch from Gunma, and it duly arrived in the 76th minute. A lovely shot from the edge of the box from Chie Edo-John Kawakami, who I thought had a really impressive game down the Gunma left. So Tokushima 0, Gunma 1 at full time. James, what did you think of the game? And then we're going to have to come to some off-field topics as well.
Yeah, let's talk about the game first. I don't know how Tokushima did not score. They had, was it in the first half, is it Tsuboi had a couple of really good chances, and
I think he managed to put himself in the net, didn't he?
How did he put the ball wide but put himself in the goal from there? How did he miss? I don't understand the physics of that. How did he miss that?
It's just not, well, we'll talk about this morning, but it was just Tokushima is just not their season so far.
I'll talk about Gunma first, actually, because when we start talking about Tokushima, it will go into the off-field stuff. But Gunma, this was their first league win of the year, and to be honest, I don't think they've been playing badly from what I've seen overall, but they've just lacked the quality to get over the line in a few games, or they've gifted a few goals to opponents, which has obviously put them on the back foot. They still seem to have the kind of team spirit that they've built up over the last couple of years, and that was a large part of what helped them to finish in the top half last year, I think. And so I think also you can see that spirit from the goal. That was, they were defending, they were blocking. They managed to get a quick counter, and they scored from probably a position where they shouldn't have scored, really. They shouldn't have scored, having been under the cosh for so long. And I don't think Kawakami should have been able to get that shot away, because there were a couple, at least two defenders close enough to close him down, whereas they were just kind of watching to see what he was going to do. And Suarez didn't even move, goalie, just watched it go in. And that's a familiar sight this season as well, isn't it? Just Suarez just watching the ball fly past him. And that's not to say that it's his fault every time, but it shows that it's another illustration of problems that they have, in that, a lot of the time the goalie is not even moving for anything.
Yeah, there's a sense of like resignation about the ball entering the net.
Yeah, oh, it's gone past me again. But yeah, so yeah, it's great for Gunma. They got their first win, so now they can stop kind of worrying about, oh, when's it going to come? When's it going to come? They've done it now, and they can build on it. And having done it against a team that's down there with them as well, that's a big kind of a relief or like a confidence boost. So like, okay, because if you lose to another team that's down, I know it's a bit early for relegation six pointers, but if you lose to another team that's down there with you, it can be a kind of a crushing blow even early on in the year. But that they won, they did it, so that's great for them. Tokushima, just absolute mess, aren't they? An absolute shambles. This awful week for them.
Where do you want to start? I mean, this game, you mentioned it's too early to call it a relegation six pointer, but I don't think Tokushima's board of directors agree, because they sacked the manager, right? Tatsumi Yoshida. He's gone after this latest defeat. And Akihiro Okada, who his official job title is what, head of the strengthening department? Is that right? Sounds like he should be working like a galvanized steel factory rather than a football team. But I think basically he's an important person, or possibly even the head of the kind of the front office there. So it'd be like, I think if we want to put in a sort of like a director of football-ish role, head of recruitment, basically, HR, head of HR, I don't know. But he's gone as well to take responsibility for the poor start to the season. So that Tokushima are looking for a new manager with Tatsumi Yoshida out. Kosaku Masuda, the assistant coach, has been put in temporary charge. So he'll be in charge for the games coming up this week. And I don't think Tatsumi Yoshida being sacked is surprising, because I think he's looked like a dead man walking since, you know, round three, round four. More surprising is that their midfielder, Toshio Shimakawa, has just randomly announced today that he's retiring. And he's only 33. He's played in all seven games in J2 so far this season. So that's a weird one. So I want to get your opinion on that, James. But before I come back to you, just to kind of put the cherry on top of the cake, made of shite for Tokushima, Kazuki Nishiya, I think he was probably captain last season. He has been bombed out of the first team since about the second week of the season after making some critical comments about the manager Yoshida, I think, on social media. So he played in the first two games and he's been training separately, is that right? Training on his own since then. So James, sacking the manager, player retiring, important midfielder training on his own, take it away.
Well, I think appointing Yoshida mid-season last year was clearly a desperation move. It paid off, because he was supposed to keep them up, and he did. But it was a departure from their previous way of doing things, you know, hiring a Spanish manager and letting him play in that particular way. It had a lot of success with Rodriguez, a bit less success with Poyatos, even less success with Le Bayern. So there was diminishing returns on that, and they just abandoned it halfway through the year because they were desperate. They stayed up, fine, but I think the biggest mistake was to keep Yoshida for this year. It looked like a bad decision in pre-season, and it has proven to be a bad decision. And now he's gone, what next? Are they just going to rely on Thiago Alves to take as many shots as possible and hope some go in? Because that seems to be what they were doing the other day. No one else at Tokushima looks like they could hit a cow's ass with a banjo, as we have just discussed. The amazing misses from Tsuboi. Not only is the manager gone and the director of football gone, they've now got players just retiring seven games into the season, which I don't know the full story behind it, obviously, but if it's just that this manager's so shit that he's completely destroyed football for this player.
I saw one story that was saying, like, he, in interviews, Shimakawa, the player who's just suddenly retired, he's supposed to be very close with Yoshida. So I wonder if it's almost the other thing of, like, the way that Yoshida's been treated has pushed him out. I don't think we'll ever get to know the full story, but, you know, it is a weird... It isn't like I'm quitting Tokushima or I'm taking a break. It's that's it. I'm done. I'm never going to wear football boots again. It's strange.
I can't see that you could... I don't think anyone could have complaint, or maybe Yoshida might say, well, it's only seven games into the season, but they've been absolutely dreadful for all of those seven games, including the one they won. So I don't think there can be any complaints about him losing his job. And the situation with Kazuki Nishia is strange, but I think it's quite instructive, right? He was the key man under the previous three managers. He's the sort of player that they announce his contract renewal on the 1st of January because it's the biggest one. He was even the key man when they got promoted in 2020. And now, apparently, according to... somebody retweeted a newspaper article saying that he had been... Yeah, as punishment for being publicly critical of the... I assume it was the manager and the coaching staff or the tactics or something... He'd been training separately from the first team. So that seems like,
the players... Not a happy camp.
Yeah, one influential player has had lost respect or confidence in the manager. And there was clearly, discontent within the club itself. I assume the director of football guy who's gone was responsible for a lot of the recruitment, perhaps including hiring and firing managers. And so, like we asked last year when things were going badly under Le Bayern, where do they go from here? Are they going to try and get another Spanish guy and go back to what they were doing? Or are they just going to get like Sam Allardyce to come in and try and keep them up?
I was thinking if they wait another couple of weeks, they might be able to get Peter Klimovsky.
Just
kidding. I think on the positives, I mean, it has been, there's just no two ways about this. It's been a terrible week for Tokushima, I think, because it's one thing to be bottom of the table with 4 points from seven matches, but to have like every news story coming out about your team for 7 days to just be negative is hard to take, I think. And I'm a Stoke City supporter, so I'm quite used to this kind of crisis, players training on their own, people being fired, kind of vibe, and it's never good, and it takes a long time to sort these things out. On the plus side, it's still, like you mentioned, they're bottom, but they're only 1 point adrift of the team above. There's plenty of good players in that team. I mean, the goalkeeper we've sung the praises of endlessly. We know that Thiago Alves up front can do it at J2 level. He's proven. There might be a route back for Nishia now that there's going to be a managerial change. So it's not a foregone conclusion that they're going to be down there for the entire season. But terrible start. And I wonder if, to make a final Stoke reference for the day, we went through five managers before people worked out it was actually the people above who didn't know what they were doing. So we'll wait and see if just changing the manager and the head of the strengthening department is enough of a palate cleanser. Is strong enough bleach to fix the problems there. But we'll have to monitor that as it goes on. But terrible week for Tokushima. Much better week for Gunma, James. As well as this win, we have a long-awaited news about their internal power harassment investigation. So what have we learned this week?
Well, what we've learned is what I gleaned from skim reading the Japanese article. I didn't attempt even to Google Translate it. So what we've learned may not be anything at all. But it seems that the club was not able to prove that there had been power harassment, or they were not. Basically, it was inconclusive or something. There's a technical term for it.
Inconclusive sounds okay.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, that'll do. And so I think what's happened is they have they've announced that they could not find evidence of power harassment, and they have kind of given the manager Oldski a bit of a warning, and they're also not happy that this video of this conversation was leaked to the media, and then they forwarded their investigation to the J League, because that's, I think, that's standard protocol when these things happen in J League. That's about right, isn't it?
Yeah, no, I think that's right. So I think my notes, I've written, it looks like Oldski manages in the clear, basically. Mm-hmm. That's where we're at this point. I mean, I think there are some, I did read one critical sort of news piece. When I say read, I use that in the loosest possible sense. I glanced at a piece which said, I think one of the criticisms of this investigation might be that there's one or two important, I don't know if they're witnesses, but one or two important people weren't interviewed about this. So, for example, you know, if I know that James witnessed this and I want the investigation to have a certain result, maybe I don't ask James what he saw. Do you know what I mean? So I think the problem with this kind of news coming out is it never fully goes away, I don't think. Because on the public side, we'll never get the full details for reasons like, you know, employee confidentiality, you know, that kind of thing. So it's obviously something went on. But it doesn't meet the criteria of power harassment, or there's no, you know, no rules have been broken, I don't think. So yeah, it looks like Oldski's fine, and he can carry on. And I don't think the J League, while they'll review what Gunma send them, I don't think anything will be overturned or changed. So yeah, it looks like it's business as usual. But yeah, very interesting situation. So we'll see if anything else comes of it. But I don't think it's like a Tokyo Verde where the manager Nagai had to quit, for example, or Shonan where Chokuje had to resign, you know, that kind of thing. So yeah, it looks like it's possibly a bit of a storm in a teacup based on what we know at the moment. So yeah, and still no results from the internal power harassment investigation at JTET, James. So you're in the clear as well. Yeah, so good. just kidding. All right, okay. We'll move on. Lawyers are telling me to keep it moving there, James. So we'll round off the rest of the round seven action from J2. The other team in the relegation zone with Tokushima and Gunma is Mito. They drew 0-0 at home to Kagoshima. I think Kagoshima will be delighted to get the clean sheet and also to finish with all 11 players this week. Kumamoto moved away from the drop zone with a 1-0 win at home to Jeff Chiba. The winner in this game was a very late penalty scored by 16-year-old Keito Kumashiro. Very, very daft penalty given away by Koya Kazama. He lost possession on the edge of his own box and then fouled Ayumu Toyoda. So yeah, silly penalty. Very old school, Jeff, to give that away. But yeah, 16-year-old Keito Kumashiro on target. Incredible. Fujieda are right on the edge of the relegation zone. This is after losing 3-0 at Ehime. A comprehensive win for them. Fujieda did hit the crossbar in the first half through Ren Asakura, but then they gave away a silly tap-in. Would you believe it, James? Fujieda giving away a silly goal. Tap-in for Shunsuke Motegi right at the start of the second half, and then Riki Matsuda and Shunsuke Kikuchi added some goals late on to make it 3-0. Ehime just cruising, aren't they, in eighth place on their return to J2. No problems at all. And finally, Akita won 1-0 at home to Iwaki. Good result for them. A thumping header from Takashi Kawano from Hiroto Moroka's deep cross in the 16th minute won this game. So, yeah, good home win for Akita. James, that's all the games from round seven rounded up. But what about our most Bravo player for this week? Any honourable mentions or any picks?
Yeah, okay. Honourable, obligatory honourable mention for Matthias Jesus of Nagasaki, who was very good again. Another goal. And from the same game, I thought Harumi Minamino, I keep wanting to say Takumi Minamino, but no, he hasn't fallen that far yet. Harumi Minamino, I know he missed a penalty. It was not a well-taken penalty. But the fact that he recovered and he scored a very good late equaliser, I think deserves an honourable mention. And also Chie Edojon Kawakami of Gunma kept a cool head to control the ball on the counter, twist and turn and score to give Gunma their first win. So, yeah, honourable mentions for those three. But my pick is Ryunosuke Sagara of Sendai for his goal and assist, contributing at key moments. He really was the standout from this week, I think. But what about you?
Somewhat boringly, my pick is Ryunosuke Sagara as well for MVP. Yeah, people are going to start thinking this is rigged, James, like the that Father Ted thing, you know, the Eurovision entry. But I think you're right. One goal and one assist pretty much won that game for Sendai Yokohama. See, they might have won the game anyway, but he made it a lot easier for them. And I think last season, Sagara, he was pretty much the only bright spot in the team by the end of the year because they had such a poor year. I think he's a homegrown player. As far as I know, he's local, I think. Or he came through the youth system, so he's popular, I think, with the fans. I might have to double-check that. That's what I think, anyway. But he was really impressive, and especially like the confidence with which he dispatched his goal was fantastic. My honourable mentions are for goalkeepers, which is also a bit boring, because I think I went big on the goalkeepers last week, so I don't know if I've got some kind of issue here that will need therapy. But I thought Masaaki Goto, your friend, James, made some really, really good saves in that Yamagata match, their win against Shimizu. Should also mention Shuichi Gonda made a superb double save in that game as well, but we can't give it to him because the team let in two goals. And Kentaro Seki, as I mentioned a little bit already, against for Yamaguchi away at Kofu, he was quite busy and he wasn't necessarily flying all over the place making spectacular saves, but he had to kind of put his arms and his head into some pretty, you know, awkward places where he was going to get knocked, he was going to get kicked. Goalkeepers don't always, well, they never want to do that, but he positively seemed to relish it, or he grimly got on with it. And I thought that was a really good example of brave and necessary goalkeeping. So he was an honourable mention for me as well. But I think we can't argue with it. Ryunosuke Sagara this week. Yeah. Fair enough. Yes, and that's, just a sign of how strong Sendai were in the second half on Saturday and how good they've been for the last few weeks, really. So, okay. We'll try and make sure next week, let's get our heads together and try and pick someone different than each other, James, to stop it becoming a moribund feature of the pod. So, yeah, okay. Let's move on then. James, what we're going to do now is just preview for the listeners two rounds of J2 games that are coming up because with, again, no heed given to busy podcasters, we've got two rounds in the space of 5 days because we've got round 8 coming up this Wednesday, April the 3rd, with all the games at 7 p.m. So I'll run through the games really quickly and then get your thoughts on where we should be focused. So yeah, all the games at the same time on Wednesday night. Sendai against Ehime, Akita host Mito, it's Iwaki against Fujieda, Gunma hosting Oita, Jeff Chiba against Tochigi, Shimizu against bottom of the table and under caretaker manager Tokushima, Yamaguchi against Kumamoto, Nagasaki against Yamagata, Kagoshima against Kofu, and the game that I think is perhaps the most enticing, Okayama against Yokohama FC. So Yokohama FC will come up against their former goalkeeper, Sven Brodersen, and ex-midfielder Ryo Tabe in that game. So I'm looking forward to seeing them again, but hope they don't have particularly good games for obvious reasons. James, what are you looking forward to on Wednesday?
Yeah, that one does look good. Okayama, Yokohama FC. That was a good rear guard action by the 10 men of Okayama the other day, which surely will further increase their confidence. And it again shows the strength of their defence. Iwaki Fujieda, that was a very entertaining fixture last year, so they've got a lot to live up to this week. Gunma Oita, Gunma looking for two in a row. Oita still can't figure them out.
Mm-hmm.
They're what are they? Win, loss, draw. Scored 6, conceded 5. It's what, I don't know what they're doing. I'm not sure they know yet either. But the journey of discovery is always interesting. Jeff Tochigi have bloodied a few noses of more illustrious opponents in recent weeks, haven't they? So that might be another tough day for Jeff.
Yeah. Jeff not had a particularly good start this year.
again. Yeah, making they do this every last year as well. Let's see, people start putting them in their top six for JPRED, and then they have a dreadful start, make everyone look silly. Then they have a good finish. So the next season, everyone puts them in their top six of JPRED, and then they have an awful start to make it more silly.
Tiresome, James.
Typical Jeff. I think that's our first typical Jeff of the season as well. So we managed to make it seven rounds before we succumb. And the only other one, I say Shimizu Tokushima, things just don't get any easier for Tokushima, do they? This is not the team you want to be playing when you're at your lowest ebb. But perhaps that will be like a catalyst. Will it be like a, you know, when the chips are down, who's going to step up? And
well, I think that's true. I think it's a lot to do with the manner of the performance that the players put in away at Shimizu. I don't think it actually matters if they get a result, to be honest. I don't think anyone's really anticipating they'll go to Shimizu and win. But I think how the players approach that game, the kind of level of effort that's shown, I think will be instructive. Yeah, under the new, I'm sure that's what the new manager or caretaker manager was saying as well. Like everybody is saying that you guys are bottlers, basically. So just roll up your sleeves. Yeah, we'll see. Yeah. All right, James. Well, speaking of bottlers, it's getting perilously close to our bedtimes, I think. So. If that's the Wednesday action kind of previewed, how about the next set of fixtures? All the games in round nine are going to be on Sunday, April the 7th. That's to give the players, you know, enough time to rest from the Wednesday game. So on Sunday, the round nine action starts at 1 p.m. It's Kumamoto against Nagasaki. So kind of Kyushu neighbors go head to head. Most of the rest of the action is at 2 p.m. Eight games at that time is Yamagata against Kagoshima. Tochigi against Yamaguchi, Gunma host Mito in the Kitakanto Derby, Yokohama FC host Iwaki, it's Kofu against Shimizu, Fujieda against Sendai, Tokushima host Jeff Chiba, and Oita host Akita, and then rounding off the fixtures at 3 p.m. it's Ehime at home to Okayama. More difficult to preview these games, James, because we obviously don't know what's happened on Wednesday at time of recording, but where would you be looking at this stage for a game from round nine?
Well, Tochigi, Yamaguchi, both perhaps unexpectedly flying high. So that might be one to keep an eye on. Gunma, Mito, of course, there's a derby, but also at the moment, both teams in the relegation zone.
Yes.
Oita, Akita, it's a struggling attack against a very good defence. So 1-0, 1-1, I think. 6-5. Who knows? Yeah,
long throws and headers.
Yeah, that's I won't be watching it, but maybe someone else might like to. I've also highlighted Fujieda against Sendai. Not sure why. I think from the highlights I saw of Ehime Fujieda, Fujieda did create some reasonable chances, I think, and they'd won their previous two games, but I mean, there's always goals when Fujieda are involved, pretty much, because defensively they are still just a mess, aren't they? Like, they still haven't figured it out. But their attack, well, they've only scored three goals, but it seems like their attack is kind of moving in the right direction. So I would expect Sendai to win that, but I think it will be a good game, because Sendai are pretty good to watch at the moment. They're not just getting results, but they're playing well. Even the nil nils, they were entertaining, from what I saw. So, yeah, those are the ones that at the moment I think will be interesting. I mean, that might change completely after Wednesday's games. But what about you?
Well, I agree with everything you've said so far, and I think Fujieda Sendai is the kind of game that a supercomputer would tell you Sendai are definitely going to win. But, you know, we've been watching J-League for a while, so I know that means now, if for some reason in my head, Fujieda are favourites for that game, because it's just how the J-League works. It throws up a game like that every now and again. But yeah, I think Sendai should go and get the job done at Fujieda, but I think that was possible, you know, potential banana skin for them. The other game that I picked out was Tokushima hosting Jeff. And that's just because if Tokushima have lost at Shimizu on Wednesday, which, you know, you fear they might, if they can go ahead and beat Jeff, I think that puts Jeff under a lot of pressure. You know, depending on what kind of result they get against Tochigi on Wednesday. Obviously, Tochigi, no pushovers, as you mentioned. And Jeff, you know, famously struggle sometimes against the lower ranked teams or the lesser teams at home. So I think that could be a big, I mean, it's obviously going to be a massive game for Tokushima considering the situation there. But Jeff, you know, they're only, is it 1-2 points outside the relegation zone after seven games? It's not where they wanted to be after such a kind of positive and feel good finish to last season, where they got into the playoffs, although they went out at the, you know, the first round in the semi-final. Plenty of good players still, and Hiro Komori might be the best striker in the division, or certainly in the top three, top four, but it's just not quite happened so far this year. So I think they'll be looking, it's big week for Jeff, I think, at home to Tochigi and away to Tokushima, two games where, you know, they'll be targeting two wins. And for Tokushima, yeah, big week for them as well. Even if Shimizu away is a daunting task, I think they'll be targeting 3 points against Jeff. So I think that has the potential to be an interesting game as well. But we'll wait to see, James. Previewing games is a bit of a mug's game, isn't it? Because we never quite know what's going to happen. But one thing we can guarantee is there will be some goals and funny moments, and we can try and round those all up on another was going to be a mega pod, isn't it, next week if we've got two rounds to cover. But hopefully at some point they'll reward us and go back to one set of games per week. We can breathe a bit more easily. But James, I think we'll leave it there for J2 for this week, if that's all right, if we've covered everything. Hopefully everybody enjoyed listening, and thank you for supporting us on Patreon and the big pod on Patreon if you do that as well. We appreciate it. But don't go anywhere, because in a moment, Magic Mike Innes is going to be on hand, and he's going to do something very similar, but probably more entertainingly phrased, in a J-Talk Short Corner. That's the J3 news coming up next. But talk to you soon. Bye for now.
J-Talk Extra Time. Hello and welcome to J-Talk Short Corner, the mini-pod that covers all things J3 of the J-League. I'm your host, Mike Innes, and in this episode, I'll be looking back on fixtures in Round 7 of the J3 season, as well as previewing the Round 8 matches coming up this weekend. There were four games on Saturday the 30th of March, and Azul Claro Numazu had the opportunity to go clear at the top, at least for 24 hours, but they couldn't cope with the Kensei Ukita and Naoki Sanda combo at AC Nagano Parseiro. Ex-Gifu and Sagamihara player Ukita scored a hat-trick, making it 5 in 3 games, 6 for the season so far. All were via assists from Sanda, the opener coming in the 10th minute, a through pass that Ukita received and then drilled inside the far post with his left foot. Azul Claro's Takuya Sugai saw his 28th minute penalty saved by Ken Tajiri, but the visitors did pull level early in the second half when Takumi Hama hit the byline and sent in a cross. Kyota Mochi's header was pushed by Tajiri onto the bar. Hagumi Wada converted the rebound. But it was 2-1 Nagano in the 61st minute. Sanda's long ball opening up the away defence. Ukita poking it beyond the advancing Kenta Watanabe. The hat-trick was completed 8 minutes later. Sanda sending in a low cross that somehow eluded Numazu defender Tatsuya Anzai to leave Ukita with an easy far post finish. Final score, Nagano 3, Numazu 1. Parseiro's best result so far pushes them up to 8th. And I note with surprise, they're unbeaten since the opening day. Azul Claro not on top of things defensively here, and they slip to 4th. 4th against 5th at start of play, FC Osaka met FC Imabari at Hanazono and played out Osaka's 4th consecutive goalless draw. Imabari had the better of things but encountered a stubborn home defence, coming closest to scoring with the game's last kick, a curling ball into the box from teenager Yumeki Yokoyama, which Tatsunari Nagai did well to claw away from under the crossbar. The Sky Blues' best effort was early on. Takumi Shimada's close-range shot blocked by visiting keeper Genta Ito. Final score, Osaka 0, Imabari 0. A hard-earned point for Naoto Otake's Osaka side, although they haven't scored since the 6-2 win at Kanazawa in Round 3. Toshiya Hattori's Imabari not quite having the invention required to crack open the opposition and claim the win. The stalemate at Osaka and the loss for Numazu gave SC Sagamihana a chance to make up ground if they could beat Kamatamari Sanuki at the Gion Stadium. And they could, although Sanuki missed an early penalty, Gentaro Yoshida putting wide of the post, a spot kick awarded when his shirt was tugged by Riku Hashimoto. Sagamihana took the lead just before half-time, Masakazu Tashiro playing it into the box, Riku Tanaka touching it off, Yudai Tokunaga dispatching a half-volley from 15 yards. On 76 minutes, Sanuki pulled level, now Eguchi's in-swinging corner flicking off the unlucky Tashiro for an own goal. But in stoppage time, Ryo Takano dinked a high ball into the away penalty area, where Kamatamari's Soichiro Fukaminato and Kei Munechika were asleep on duty, leaving Yuji Senema free to head in. Final score, Sagamihara 2, Sanuki 1. The green and blacks go up to 6th. Kamatamari remain competitive, but 7 games in are still looking for their first win. FC Ryukyu Okinawa are well placed just outside the top 6 with a game in hand after they won at home to Katare Toyama. Katare were one up at the break through Tsubasa Yoshihira, given space 30 yards from goal to shoot into the bottom corner. But the balance of play switched in the minutes after the restart. First, Yu Tomidokoro equalising, quickest to the ball after Haruto Shirai's spot kick was saved by Toshiki Hirao. Then, Toyama going a player down when Hiroya Sueki was given a second yellow for a foul on Tomidokoro. And the hosts went ahead on 63 minutes. Takeyuki Tomiyasu's run taking him past Musashi Oyama and into the box to fire into the roof of the net. Shirai was then brought down in the area by Hirao and he got up to round off the scoring from the penalty spot. Final score, Ryukyu 3, Toyama 1. Kim Jong-song's Ryukyu bounced back after last week's narrow loss at Numazu. Michiharu Otagiri mystifyingly unresponsive to the sending off of Sueki. His Katare side have just one win so far and slip back down below halfway. Six games then on Sunday the 31st when FC Gifu went top of the J3 table for the first time in nearly 3 years, thanks to a late winner at Matsumoto Yamaga. Daigo Araki gave Gifu the perfect start when in only the 3rd minute he pounced on a miscontrol by Matsumoto's Kosuke Yamamoto and drove in a low shot from 25 yards. That advantage lasted only 9 minutes, the hosts equalising when Yusuke Kikui's close-range shot was blocked and Kazuma Yamaguchi fired in the rebound. Yamaga started with recent loan signing from Vival in Nagasaki, Serin Saliu Diop up front, noting the club haven't said how long they expect main striker Hayato Asakawa to be out injured. And the 20-year-old caused problems aplenty for the visiting defence, his looping header touched acrobatically onto the bar by Shu Mogi, a decent shout for a penalty later being waved away by referee Shingo Kuniyoshi. But Gifu stole the victory in injury time, Kosuke Fujioka taking advantage of an understaffed home defence to send in a low cross, jabbed in at the far post by Shohei Aihara. Cue wild celebrations with the travelling support. Final score, Matsumoto 1, Gifu 2. Not perhaps the most fortunate of days at the office for Yamaga or Diop. Gifu at times rode their luck, but in the end had the attacking quality to take maximum points. A triumph for Gifu, but Ormia Ardija dropped to second as they dropped points with a draw at Giravance Kitakyushu. Kenyu Sugimoto was on target for the second week running for Ormia, giving the Squirrels a 28th-minute lead when he was left free to glance in Katsuya Nakano's high ball. But the hosts then moved more onto the front foot, forcing two good saves from Ardija keeper Takashi Kasahara, the first from Ryo Nagai's point-blank header, the second from Rinpei Okano's looping volley. And the Sunflowers drew level midway through the second half as the away side failed to deal with Okano's cross. Takeya Inui headed it back across goal. Kohei Kiyama thumped it beyond Kasahara from 8 yards. Final score, Kitakyushu 1, Ormia 1. Giravance are hardly pulling up trees, but they haven't lost in their last three games. Ardija likewise not brilliant here, even with Rion Ichihara back from under-19 international duty, but their unbeaten start to the season remains intact. Elsewhere, the game of the day was at Roto Field, where Nara Club hosted Zvegan Kanazawa in what turned out to be an encounter with twists and turns aplenty. Kanazawa opened the scoring on 18 minutes. Yuki Kajiura's cross picking up a deflection, home defender Kei Ikoma slipping at the vital moment, leaving Hayato Otani to score his first of the season. It was 1-1 at the break, Nara drawing level when visiting keeper Itsuki Ueda came for and missed Yuki Okana's cross, Shota Yomesaka coming round the back to head in. 9 minutes into the second period, Zvegan retook the lead. Another cross from Kajiura doing the damage, clinically finished at the near post by Yusei Toshida. But within 11 minutes of this, the hosts were in front, equalising when Yota Shimokawa's cross was headed in at the far post by Yomesaka, going ahead when Manato Hyakuna stole in to head home, another ball in from Shimokawa. But Kajiura saved the day for the visitors, hooking over the line Shunya Mori's near post corner to rescue a point deep in stoppage time. Final score, Nara 3, Kanazawa 3. Julian Marin Basilos Nara continue their sluggish start to the season, a single win to show for their efforts so far. Not the sturdiest performance from Akira Ito's Zvegan, but Kajiura and Toshida continue to catch the eye. There were first wins of the season for both YSCC Yokohama and Iwate Gruja Morioka. That was only one of four firsts for YSCC at Fukushima United. The Kanagawa Seagulls fielded Michiya Okamoto in goal, making his J-League debut at age 28, following the departure to Hokkaido Consadole Sapporo of Jun Kodama. Okamoto put in an excellent performance, pulling off good saves from Ryo Shiohama and Kiichi Yajima despite the difficult conditions. Speaking of which, YSCC almost went ahead in bizarre circumstances. Jorn Pedersen's header onwards from a long clearance, caught by the buffeting wind and striking the post from fully 40 yards. Another first, the game's only goal came on 54 minutes. Sean van Eerden rising to head in Hiroto Domoto's corner kick. A first pro goal for the 19-year-old. Final score, Fukushima 0, YSCC 1. The hosts unable to take advantage of the opportunities presented by the weather. To Okamoto goes the credit for the fact that this was YSCC's first clean sheet of the season. Iwate's victory, meanwhile, came at home to Tegevajaro Miyazaki, a battle between the division's bottom two teams. The main action was in the second half, Gurugia's Koki Matsubara having a shot cleared off the line by Shogo Rikiyasu, who at the other end hit the post for the visitors. The only goal came in the 67th minute, Kenneth Otabor breaking into the penalty area, his shot tipped onto the bar by Kokoro Aoki, Tsubasa Yuge nodding in the rebound. Late on, the host's veteran Kota Fukatsu picked up a second yellow for a foul on Shun Obu. Final score, Iwate 1, Miyazaki 0. The dictionary definition of scrappy for the Paper Cranes, but the win places them level on points with Hachinohe and Seneki. Tega Bajano are already looking at a 3-point gap between them and the rest. And finally, Vanrare Hachinohe came away from their long trip to Gainare Tottori with a goalless draw. Hachinohe's Aoi Sato had an early effort ruled out for offside, while the Tottori bench and most of the home fans thought their team had scored a 90th minute winner when Shunosuke Metsuki found space in the area and fired a low angled shot what turned out to be just wide of the post, the billowing of the net deceiving the eye. Final score, Tottori 0, Hachinohe 0. Gainare with 4 draws and a win in the last 5, which I guess means stability. A first away point, at least, for Vanrare. So now to run through the top and bottom of the league standings after round 7. The top 6 are Gifu with 16 points, Omiya with 14 and a game in hand, Osaka, Numazu and Imabari, all 13, Sagamihara, 12. And down at the other end of the table, the bottom 6 are Kitakyushu with 6 points and a game in hand, YSCC with 6, Saneki, 5, Hachinohe and Iwate, 5 and games in hand, and bottom of the table with 2, Miyazaki. Just time now for a quick look ahead to the round 8 fixtures over the weekend, when there are 8 games on Saturday the 6th of April. New leaders Gifu have a tough game in prospect at Sagamihara. It's second against third at NAC 5, Omiya against Osaka. Can Numazu get back to winning ways at home to Iwate? For Imabari, there's a home match against Nagano. Big game to see at the GGC, Kanazawa against Matsumoto. Is it too early to say there are a couple of must-win matches for Toyama at home to Kitakyushu, for Miyazaki at home to Nara, and Tottori play host to Fukushima? 2 games then on Sunday the 7th when Ryukyu make the long, long trip to Hachinohe. And finally, Seneki are at home to YSCC. With all the week's business seen to then, that's it for this mini pod. All that remains is for me to say, thanks for listening, enjoy your football, and see you next time. Bye for now.